Welcome to the Blue Oasis Podcast. This is the podcast for finding peace and prosperity, learning the history of hobbies, as well as developing a little side hustle. If you want to find peace and prosperity in your life, this is your show. Get ready. You're listening to the Blue Oasis Podcast. I am your host, Adam Rothstein. All right, let's get to the show. And welcome back to the Blue Oasis Podcast. I am your host, Adam Rothstein. With me today is Lucy Potasnik from Michigan. How are you doing?
Hi, Adam. I'm doing great. Super excited and grateful to join you this afternoon.
It's 8:02 on the East Coast.
You're right. I'm sorry. It's been such a busy day that I just got out of Zumba and I rushed over here. So we're a little bit of a different time zone. It's only 7 o'clock here, but it's definitely evening.
Yeah. All right. So tell me a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I was really excited to stumble across your podcast just because it seems like what you promote and what your mission is really lines up with what my background is. I grew up in the suburbs of Detroit, and I like to say that I was just a little girl with a big dream. From the time that I can remember, I was just obsessed with horses. I always had this burning desire. All I could think about, talk about, sleep, dream, eat, or like everything was just horses. And so naturally I begged my dad day in and day out, "Dad, please buy me a horse." And coming from two blue collar parents, you know, my mom had two jobs and she worked in the factory. Horses were kind of out of the realm of possibilities for me. So sure enough, I decided that I had to take matters into my own hands. And so the day I turned 16 was the day I got my driver's license and the day I decided to create a Craigslist ad that said, "I'll ride your horse for free." And that was kind of how it all started, because then next thing I know, I have all these Yahoos calling me with their unbroke, green broke horses that hadn't been ridden or touched in 5 or 10 years. And here I am, just like the happiest thing to be driving all over God's country and riding these horses. And here I am, I think I know how to ride because I've ridden a couple camp horses. I'm getting thrown off, bucked off, flipped on top of, just everything you can imagine. So I have a very quick rude awakening that there's a lot to learn. But even though I was confronted with that, those learning obstacles, it didn't matter how many times I fell off, how many times I ate dirt. It was just like you live and you learn, and it's like a failing forward. You live or you learn from your mistakes and you get back on the horse and you give it another try. And so I never actually received any formal education or instruction growing up. It was just these horses that taught me everything that I know. And fast forward a couple years, and I was blessed enough. Now I buy, train, and sell horses all over the country. And I went on to accidentally open one of Michigan's largest public trail riding companies. So I like to, now I've kind of pivoted, and I believe that if you're blessed, be a blessing. And so now my jam is just empowering and inspiring other people that you can be, do, have anything that you dream of. And that's why I love teaching people how to rewire their subconscious minds, leverage the laws of the universe, and essentially transform their identity to really to conquer their goals. So that's kind of the transformation, if you will.
All right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So moving on. So you were working with horses your entire life. You never deviated from that. You exactly when you were, I'm sorry. Man, I'm a bit nervous here, but just growing up, did you feed the horses? Did you, foster teeth or whatever the term is? I'm not too familiar. Did you immediately got a job?
Take care of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how it kind of worked out is when I was 8 years old, my My mom, okay, so I'm the youngest of three children. So my mom had a kid every single decade, and I'm the baby. So when I was 8, my brother was 16 and he had a girlfriend. Well, his girlfriend had horses. And so every single weekend, I would pack my bag and I'd spend the entire weekend at her house. Her name was Chelsea. And she was like my idol because she had horses. And so the whole weekend, we would go there and I would help her shovel stalls and take care of the horses. And then that was kind of how I learned how to ride. Now, granted, they were, I think it was like a 25-year-old Palomino quarter horse gelding by the name of Mickey. And so I learned how to ride on this Mickey horse. And gosh, that and he was very gentle, but it was kind of and so it was an exchange, like I would help her take care of the animals and muck out the stalls. And in return, we would ride together, and she taught me how to ride. But that was short-lived because I want to say they were together for 2 years. No, they were together until I was about 12, because when I was 12 years old, I remember she moved away to Tennessee. And when she moved to Tennessee, I was like heartbroken and I was crushed because not only had she became like a best friend and a sister to me, we also shared the passion of horses. And when she left, my weekend getaways of horseback riding also went out the window. So it was really, really hard. That was really hard when I was 12 years old to have that loss. So but we kept in contact and we're friends on Facebook, so now she
That's
gets to root me on from afar.
all good. And I take it you maintained your love of horses through college. There wasn't like a polo team you ever joined, was there?
No, but I always thought polo would be so much fun to do. Oh my God, I really want to try polo because if you think about it, it's you're on a racehorse because typically thoroughbreds are racehorses, and the same thoroughbred breed that they use in like the racing, they'll usually use in the polo. So you're on a horse and you've got, a 3 foot stick, 4 foot stick in your hand, and you're reaching over all the way on the horse trying to hit the ball where you're like the horse is galloping and you're like trick riding hanging off of it sideways. I always thought that was pretty exhilarating. Have not had the pleasure of trying polo yet, but it's on the list of things to do for sure. I think to answer your question, so I did have a little bit of a background of horses, like from my childhood. And my dad would take me every Sunday, not every Sunday, but he would take me once in a while on Sunday to go horseback riding at like where they rent you the horse for like an hour. And I would go like on a private ride. I'd make sure to get there first thing because I didn't want to ride with anybody else. I wanted to make sure that I was alone with the trail guide so that way we'd be able to walk, trot, canter. And so because I knew how to walk, trot, canter on a school horse, I thought that I knew how to ride anything, which, like I said, was a very rude awakening when by the time I was 16, I was going out and riding people's green unbroke horses. What had happened after, to kind of connect the dots for you, I ended up eventually meeting a horse dealer who would get in anywhere from 40 to 50 horses in a week. And so I had to ride everything that came in because if I like, I had to ride it and I had to sell it fast, quick, cheap, because if I didn't sell it fast enough, it was getting shipped to Canada. And so and what happens in Canada. So I was here I was 16-year-old girl on a mission to save all the horses of the world. So here I am riding like these 50 horses a week, trying to save as many as I can, create ads, listing them for sale for $800, trying to sell them. And that was kind of my first step into the world of being an entrepreneur, where it's like the sky is the limit and whatever you can do, you can create.
Okay, so now I have a question of when you were riding like 40, 50 horses a week. I mean, did it feel like a chore at all? Because I've had this issue even just when I started the hockey podcast, and it's like, okay, now I've got to watch these games, and I've got to check these stats, and a lot of out-of-market games too, but it does get to be a chore. Did you experience that, have that, and it's like, what am I doing sort of moment?
I think, okay, so two things. First, when I was young, it's kind of like when you're young and dumb and you don't have any responsibilities, It was very much so like it was my favorite thing in the whole world. And there was absolutely nothing better than riding these horses. And they all had such unique personalities that you're like, first of all, I'm very uncertainty driven. So Tony Robbins talks about the six human needs, and there's uncertainty is one of them. And it talks about how you want like variety and excitement and adventure. Well, I'm very uncertainty driven. And so that met one of my needs at a very high level because here I am riding all these different horses. And when I'm riding these horses, they don't come with any backstory. They don't come with a history. I don't know which ones are broke, which ones are not broke, which ones are safe, which ones aren't. So, I mean, I was very lucky and very blessed to make it out in one piece. Thank you, Jesus. But so for me, that never really got riding the horses and working the horses was always such a pleasure, so much fun, was always just so much joy associated with it. But I would say that along the way, I eventually went on to, after I graduated, I sold horses all through college, and then I got scooped up into the corporate world. And then I ended up leaving the corporate world to pursue my passion of horses. And that was really a scary, big leap of faith because here I had this comfy, cozy corporate job with full benefits, an awesome salary, paid vacation. Really, I mean, my dad was like, people have worked their whole lives to have what you have, and you're just gonna throw it all away. And because, like I said, my parents were like blue collar factory workers, they didn't really like understand the whole like entrepreneur gig. They thought I was crazy. But there has not been a day since I've left corporate that I have regretted my decision. So, kind of looping back to your question, were there times where it seemed daunting or overwhelming? Yes. Oh my God, absolutely. Leaving corporate, which was like a world of security, and you have a guaranteed check coming to you every single week or biweekly in my case, but like that was guaranteed. And then going from that to entrepreneur, where it's like do or die, the weight of the world is on your shoulders. Like you have bills to pay. And if you don't make things happen, like it's on you. Well, you see, Michigan, we have the four seasons. And as you probably are very familiar with, the winter can be very long and cold and miserable. And so horses can really, it's seasonal. So whether you're doing horse sales or trail rides, everything's really going to come to a screeching halt in the winter months. Like everything just slows down. And I would tell you that those first couple of winters that I had to endure, they were very trying and very difficult because here I was, I had these horses listed for sale and I would be meeting these prospective buyers. And I remember there was this one night where I just came home and I was crying because I'm like, oh my God, I'm showing these people these horses. I'm spending hours and hours and hours of my time meeting customer after customer. These horses are behaving like absolutely perfect. I couldn't ask for the horses to perform any better than they are, but I just felt like these people were just wasting my time over and over and over again. And I feel like that was like the overwhelming slash like difficult, daunting part of my journey was surviving the first couple of winters, being a new entrepreneur in a seasonal business.
Yeah. So everyone goes through that phase essentially. But now a question about the horses. I really do they are not at their best during the winter, or is it because I've seen like the Christmas lights in my town where I grew up in Maryland. I mean, I've seen horses in the winter though, but they
Yeah.
just, it's not that you just can't do much during that time because of the people that come or the potential
Well,
customers during that season.
no. Well, first of all, I would say that a horse doesn't, it doesn't matter to the horse what season it is. There are a lot of what we like to call fair weather riders, where people who own horses and they only like to ride when it's nice and when it's, 7 degrees and sunny out. So a lot of people will own horses and then let their horses sit all winter long, where they'll just feed them and take care of them, but won't actually work them, ride them, exercise them. So they're not keeping the horse in shape. And a horse is, it's an animal. It's I don't want to say a wild animal, because I mean, and they're born in captivity and they're raised and, they're friendly in that sense. But there's a lot of training that goes into horses. And if you're not working them on a consistent basis, their training is not, it's not going to get any better. And so horses are animals that do require a certain level of attention, especially if you're, if you're riding them. And some horses, yes, there are some older horses that know their jobs, and you can let them sit for, 2, 3, 4, 5 months and then hop right back on, and they're going to ride off just as good as when you left them. But those are kind of like the diamond in the rough horses, and that's not super typical. Usually, and every horse is different. If you take like a thoroughbred, for example, that's got like lots of energy, those horses, oh my gosh, I was working off the track thoroughbreds and I was teaching them how to jump and converting them into dressage horses. They needed to be ridden 5 days a week. And if they didn't get ridden 5 days a week, they were like cuckoo crazy. And it didn't matter if it was summer, spring, or fall. Those horses needed a job and they needed to be ridden. So, kind of like I said earlier, the cool thing about working with all of the different horses is all of their unique personalities. But typically, when you stay with like within the world of the stock breeds, which are like quarter horses, paint horses, maybe Appaloosas or even draft crosses, like they're pretty chill, pretty easygoing horses that you can ride once a week and you're golden.
All right. That's great. I did want to get to your college background. Where did you graduate from? Just quick question.
Yeah, so I went to the University of Michigan. I actually went, I did my first 2 years in a community college, and then it was actually a lot of fun. I remember like leaving high school and then going into the community college, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like the ultimate form of freedom. Because, high school is like so regimented, and you had to get in at this time, you had a lunch break, and you were here until this time, 5 days a week. And then when I first got like my first taste of college, I'm like, oh my God, I can create my schedule and I can come and go and I can hang out on campus or I can whatever. I just had total freedom, and I loved, and so then I was able to set it up in a way that I was able to save a ridiculous amount of money by going the first 2 years to the community college and then being able to transfer all of my credits to the University of Michigan. And then I ended up getting my bachelor's in international business, with a, whatchamacallit? I can't even remember what it's called, with a minor in Spanish. So I did that, and then I got scooped up into the corporate world. And then it was like when I went into the corporate world, I felt like I was in high school again, because again, it was like such a regimented, you have to be clocked in and you have to be in the cube by 8 a.m. with your computer turned on. And then from 11:50 until 12:50 is your lunch break. You can either have lunch in your cube, you can go to the cafeteria, or you can, go out with a group of friends, and then you can't leave your desk until 5 or 5:30 in the afternoon. And I remember feeling like, wow, to go from high school to college to the cube, I'm like, this is I don't know, I felt like I was missing that freedom that is really important to me. So leaving the corporate world and being able to create my own schedule on my own terms, has been one of the best decisions. I would highly recommend everybody do as well. Take the chance on yourself.
And I would recommend it too, even if you do like your corporate job. And I mean, like, I just have a side hustle of just, producing audiobooks and selling that. I mean, I've sold over 500 of them, and it's like,
Yeah, but it's
Wow,
like,
that's
yeah, I assure
amazing.
everyone it's worth it. That's why I'm doing this. That's why I'm promoting myself and others. And I just
What
in
kind of audiobooks do you mostly do?
sports mostly. I produced one for a client on basketball, produced one on baseball for myself and hockey. And I know hockey's really big up in Michigan, and I've played it, so it
Yeah.
just so it's been quite something. And I did one on chess just because I wanted to do it.
Yeah,
So
just something different. That's
something
awesome. I
different,
love that.
and maybe I can finally do the audiobook for a novel I wrote back during quarantine. But that was a yeah now yeah that's 4 years ago. That's crazy though.
I know time flies.
Jeez. Now I'm 30 too, so I feel older now. I do. But given all that, where does quantum physics play into this?
Oh, quantum physics is my favorite thing. So, quantum physics is essentially the idea that we live in a vibrational universe. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah, I've heard this, but I've never actually understood the concept.
Okay. Are you ready? Are you ready? This is really
I'm
exciting.
ready.
So, if you talk to any scientists, and you ask, okay, what is everything made of? They're going to say everything is made of matter. Okay, what is matter made of? Matter is made of molecules. Okay, you break down a molecule, what do you get? You get atoms. And then you start looking at the atom, and then you've got the protons, you've got the electrons, you've got the nucleus, and then you've got, and so you have these different parts of the atom. Well, the electron, it's constantly moving and it's constantly spinning. And so, based on the speed or the frequency that the electron is moving, is going to determine if it's a solid, a liquid, or a gas, right? So, whether even if we're looking at something like a table that seems like it is a totally solid object, it's actually vibrating and it's moving. And that means that every single cell of our body is constantly moving. It's in constant vibration. So that means every single thing that we can see, touch, hear, smell, taste is a vibration. We are vibrational interpreters. And so our five senses, they interpret vibration. If I smack this down, you're going to hear a noise. And what that noise is a vibration. So your ears are interpreting the vibration. When you see something, there's a light spectrum and your eyes are interpreting that vibration and then it's transmitted into your brain. And so just like smell, taste, touch, everything is a vibration. And so therefore, that leads to the idea that we are vibrational beings. We are energetic beings. We are empathic beings, meaning that we're intuitive and we're feeling, and therefore we're all connected. So then it leads itself to the idea that if everything carries a frequency, then thoughts must also carry a frequency. Your thoughts are energy. Everything is energy. And energy is your highest form of currency because your energy is going to be defined by your emotional state. If you're feeling excited and alive and unstoppable, you're going to be operating at a peak state or a high vibrational frequency. Whereas if you are feeling depressed or angry or mad or sad or lonely, those are going to be lower vibrational frequencies. So therefore, if we're able to recognize the state or the energetic state or the emotional state that we're operating in, then we're able to change it and we're able to elevate our state. And the reason why we want to elevate our state is because we live in a vibrational universe, an attraction-based universe, and we don't attract what we want. We don't attract what we want. We attract what we are. So therefore, if we want more happiness, we have to be happier. If we want more money, we have to be more generous. If we want more love, we have to give more love. We have to essentially embody the energy of what we want to create. And so decisions are what shape our destiny. You are where you are today based on every single decision that you've made up until this point, right? So
Yeah.
what's the one thing that affects your decision making? It's the emotional state that you're residing in. Because again, if you're in a peak state and you feel like you're going to conquer the world, you're going to make very different decisions than if you're depressed and full of fear and anger. You're going to make very different decisions. So therefore, if you have a vision and you know with absolute clarity exactly what you want, you're going to make much better decisions when you're operating in a peak emotional state versus a lower vibrational emotional state. And essentially, that's what I teach people is how to access these peak states, but also how to maintain them. And so that's really the first step in understanding that you are the powerful creator of your own reality, and that anything the mind can conceive and believe, you can achieve. And understanding that thoughts become things. Every single thing that, like, if you look around and you're like, okay, look at this microphone. Well, somebody had to have, like, before this actually existed in physical reality, somebody had to have the idea to create it. And so every single thing that we're looking at came from the imagination of somebody. And therefore, thoughts carry energy and they have a frequency, which means the higher vibrational thoughts, the thoughts of positivity and empowerment and encouragement, things that inspire and uplift you and make you smile, are going to be vibrating or oscillating at a much higher frequency versus disempowering thoughts or thoughts of fear or lack or scarcity. But a lot of times, what happens is that we are all conditioned beings. Conditioned meaning conditioned from our past, from traumas that we've experienced, from our parents, what they like the lessons that they've unintentionally taught us. So therefore, our subconscious mind is very much so conditioned. And we all have these beliefs that we're carrying with us and we believe to be true. But if you think about it, a belief at the end of the day is nothing more than a thought that you keep thinking. And therefore, I love challenging my clients to really ask themselves, where did this belief come from and does it serve me? What are the thoughts that I'm thinking on a regular basis? Because your thoughts are what create your reality. If you don't like your life, think better thoughts. And essentially, what I do, and the first step to all of this, the most important key is awareness. Because if you're not, a lot of us are operating with these unconscious patterns. You see, if you take a step back and look at our life is nothing more than a sequence of patterns. We're creatures of habit, and we do the same thing day in and the same thing day out. And we fall into these emotional patterns where we're used to feeling the same way. We fall into these patterns of focus where we're used to focusing on certain things, patterns of language. We're using the same words and talking about the same ideas. And therefore, we're never really stepping outside of our comfort zone. We're never stretching ourselves. And that's what I love to do. I love to challenge people to show up, dream big, use their imagination the way that it was meant to be used, and therefore allow people to really become the best versions of themselves mentally, physically, spiritually, and financially. And that's like a little bit of everything. So I hope that makes sense.
It does, it does. Which leads me to my next question. How do you get out of your comfort zone? As an introvert, this one really hits home for me. Yeah.
Well, it's funny, the comfort zone, when you think about it, because it's called the comfort zone, where we feel most comfortable, right? But the thing that's so interesting about it is when you look at our mind is not wired to bring us fulfillment and happiness and success. Our brain is wired to keep us alive. Our brain is wired to keep us safe and to keep everything that's scary and dangerous as far away as possible. But unfortunately, that's not going to take us to really where we want to be. And therefore, it's so important for us to constantly push ourselves outside of our comfort zone. And what's interesting is that our comfort zone isn't necessarily what's comfortable per se. It's really what it should be is called the familiar zone. What are you familiar with? What's familiar to you? The brain moves towards what's familiar. The brain likes what's familiar because what's familiar is comfortable. Now, what's familiar for some people might be pain. What's familiar for some people might be overwhelm. It might be stress. It might be feelings of anxiety. And so, what I help people to do is really, again, challenge those thoughts, challenge those patterns, and do something different. So, I give people essentially a toolbox of different techniques and proven strategies that are going to elevate your state, really change the way that you're thinking on a fundamental basis, and really embrace different high vibrational emotions. And something, it could be something as simple as doing a gratitude list. There's so much power in gratitude. When you pour out gratitude, the universe or God, they feels that and is going to, like, the more things that you have to be grateful for, the more that the universe is going to bless you with more things to be grateful. It's kind of like, imagine this. Imagine, it's Christmas and you have two cousins, and one cousin, you give them, you go out and you buy to you buy, let's say you buy them the same thing. You buy them each, I don't know, maybe they both like cooking. So you give one of them an air fryer and then the other one the air fryer. And the one cousin is like, cool, thanks. Like, doesn't even care, doesn't show any appreciation. In fact, they're actually complaining and they're like, this, like, I already have an air fryer. Like, this is lame. Like, I don't need, like, cool. Or they don't show any appreciation. But the other cousin that you bought the same air fryer for is like, oh my gosh, yeah, this is the coolest air fryer. I have one, but it's going to be so great having another one because now I'm going to be able to make twice as much food, or this is the exact model that I want. Like, you are going, like, when you think of who you want to gift something else to, you're immediately going to think, oh, I would much rather gift something to the cousin who poured out gratitude, because when you pour out gratitude, it inspires more, I don't know, more like, the universe is going to be inspired to give more to you. So that's why so many people get caught in these patterns of overwhelm or anxiety or fear or stress, that they've been living in these feelings for weeks, months, years, that they've essentially identified who they are with, like, I'm just stressed. I'm just resting bitch face. And that's kind of who they are now. And part of the problem is because they forgot what freedom feels like, or they forgot what abundance feels like, or they forgot what peace and relaxation and ease and flow feel like. And so a lot of times it's taking the time to really practice gratitude. And that's why I'm a huge advocate of meditation, because it's one of those things that's going to help rewire your subconscious mind by quieting the mind, releasing all resistance, and allowing your vibration to rise.
Yeah, and as someone who struggles to sleep, I mean, it is a good thing to have too. I mean, I even read fiction too. Do you recommend your clients read fiction at all? Just curious.
I personally don't really read too much fiction. I'm a really big proponent of, like, whatever you consume, just make sure that it's positive. And so make sure that it is, 'cause remember, every single thought you think carries a frequency, and every moment is a manifested miracle based on your thoughts, feelings, words, emotions. So if you're reading something, if you're consuming something, if you're watching something on TV that's going to elicit fear or anger or sadness or whatever it could be, I really wouldn't recommend consuming that material. However, if reading fiction makes you feel good, and it inspires you, and it gets like the creative juices flowing, and you start getting new, like it inspires you to have a new idea, then absolutely, for sure. I personally love reading like all of the Dr. Wayne Dyer and Tony Robbins and Joe Dispenza, which are more nonfiction-esque books. But I mean, I've read like The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. That's kind of like a, it's like a fiction story, but with like really beautiful like morals, or like the overall takeaways were very beautiful and powerful.
Yeah. I bring that up because my mentor Jason Stapleton sent an email out, and then it's like, it takes it off the self. You're not focused on yourself in the moment, and it's actually better to sleep with that, because when you're going to sleep, your mind is racing a million miles a minute for someone who's autistic like myself. And if I read James Clear, I'll start applying that to myself. Even if it's a good thing, I'll just be up and have and just be a little nocturnal. But with fiction or just with meditation, I just feel better afterwards.
Yeah.
So
Me
there's
too. Meditation is like one of my go-to things. Like if I'm having a bad day, like if I feel like I'm vibrationally out of alignment, like I'm to the point where like I can tell if I'm not feeling like me and radiating sunshine and positivity, that I'm like, wait a second, wait a second. Let me just stop. Let me just sit down, take 5 minutes, close my eyes, and just do a quick rampage of appreciation, or just do like a 5 minute breathing exercise. Because what that's going to do is, when you're focusing on your breath, or when you're focusing on everything possible to that you can appreciate and adore, then again, you're going to raise your vibration. A lot of times, like we all have self-talk, that little tiny voice in our head that like won't stop. We all have that. We have 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day. And what's wild is that 90% of them are usually all negative. And so there, and it's kind of like, if we know that our thoughts are creating a reality and 90% of our thoughts are negative, whew, what kind of reality are we creating? So therefore, when you take a practice like meditation, that's what it's doing, is you're closing your eyes, you're breathing, and thoughts are going to come into your mind. Like we're not dead. So, and we're certainly not perfect. It's a practice, right? So many people are like, oh, I tried meditation, it doesn't work for me. And I'm like, no, like it is working. I promise it's working, because what's happening is, just in the recognition of a thought floating into your mind, then like in the realization that you're like, oh wow, I'm thinking something, then you just lovingly release it, and then you return back to your breath. And again, going kind of like looping that back through the self-talk, that like when you notice that voice in your head, you shut it down. What's really important for people to understand is that you are not your thoughts. You are the observer of your thoughts. And just because you think a thought does not mean that it's true. So many of ourselves are so good at tearing ourselves down, or being our own worst critic. And it's like, just because we're thinking that doesn't mean it's true. And it's the awareness and the acknowledgement that, like, wait a second. Voice, I did not like that. That is not okay. You are not allowed to talk to me like that. So we're gonna fix that right now. And so that's where a lot of like self-love comes into play, where it's like self-love is one of those like fundamentally important things that we all have to learn to like really embrace and lean into. And the more that we hear the voice in our head, and we're able to stop it and correct it and kind of like tune it to whatever is going to serve us, whatever positive affirmation is, like, oh, instead of, oh, I can't afford that, be like, let me figure out how I can afford that. And just, switching how you're talking to yourself, instead of being like, oh, I'm broke, being like, no, I am capable, and I'm great at making money, and I have always found a way to make ends meet. And abundance finds me and seeks me out. They're just all sorts of different. We have all sorts of different like affirmations that we like to share with people just to kind of get your mind embracing different belief systems that are going to serve you instead of tear you down.
So let me try this. Yeah, just need to clear the throat. So if I'm just not the best getting dates, I'll just say, no, I'm a great man, I'm a great and any woman would be lucky to have me, or something like that. Or maybe I'm taking.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes. Yes. Okay. So, can I share something really fun with you? Okay. So, there's this book and it's called Project 369. And what it has you do is you write out your I am affirmations and then you write out what you want to create or manifest. You write it down 3 times in the morning, 6 times in the afternoon, and 9 times at night. Okay. And if you want, you can kind of be creative with it and do however you want to work it. You can write the same affirmation down 3, 6, 9 times, or you can kind of mix it up in like a creative, fun way. So, before I met, I'm currently in a lovely relationship, and before I manifested him, I was single, single as a Pringle. And I was sick of being single and I was sick of meeting these guys that it was just like the whole process was just, it wasn't fun. And so what I did was I started writing down in this Project 369 book. I decided like I made the decision. And that's the thing is like you're only ever one decision away from a completely different life. And so in that moment, I made the decision. I am going to manifest the perfect partner. And so then I started writing all of these different affirmations. I started writing, I am worthy of true love. I'm so excited that I found the man of my dreams. I'm so grateful that we get to travel the world and have so much fun laughing together. I'm so grateful that we're the perfect vibrational match. I'm so grateful that he's a master chef, and I'm so grateful that he loves giving me massages and just all this like random stuff that I was just like writing about this like dream guy. And I'm not even kidding you. It was less than 3 weeks, 20 days of intentional focus, because where your focus goes, your energy flows. I was able to manifest like my dream guy. So super crazy, super wild, but that's why I get so excited about leveraging the laws of the universe, because we live in an abundant universe with infinite supply, and all it comes down to is knowing what you want and asking for it and really focusing your energy, attention, and focus. And you can be, do, have anything you want.
And you can even come out of bad situations. I never exactly did that, but I never thought I was going to play college hockey, and yet that was the one thing on my mind, even though I was a bench runner in high school. I mean, I just kept it up. I went to everything. I like did two summer leagues at a time, so I was like on the ice four times a week easy, and I was like running up hills and stuff just to make it to Towson, and and I got there, and actually got my a little Rudy moment, if you've seen that movie. So I don't know if I don't know if it was ever in me though, but we definitely do things unintentionally, and we go flow through life. We just, going through the motions. But I think, whether it's a conscious concentration or a subconscious concentration, life will take you to a direction, whether you like it or not. So it's on you to control it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why you have to take radical responsibility. I love teaching all of my clients radical responsibility and really this stopping this idea of blame and blaming things that are outside of ourselves. We have to take responsibility of the thoughts that we think. We have to take responsibility of the words that we're using. We have to take responsibility of the emotions that we're allowing ourselves to feel. Like, what's crazy is that we were blessed with freedom of focus, and we can choose to focus on whatever we want. And focus is feeling. So if you're focused on something negative, if you're focused on the traffic that you're experiencing, you're going to feel that. And in the feeling of that, you're going to attract more things on that same vibrational frequency that are going to upset you or irritate you. Where if you just live in this like unconditional state of bliss, unconditional happiness, no matter what outside circumstances cross your path, you're not going to let it rock you. You're not going to let it lower your vibration because you're going to choose to see the good in all people, places, and things.
You're going to
So,
choose not to let it break you.
yeah.
I guess a couple more questions for you. So what is your schedule like?
Crazy. No, it's kind of it's unpredictable right now. I'm trying to move towards something with a little bit more. I guess right now the only things that I mean, like my morning routine is pretty much the only real schedule that I have. Like I have a morning routine and a nightly routine, and my morning routine is I wake up and as soon as my eyes open, I meditate. I don't even check my phone. I don't get distracted with like any emails or text messages that I might find there. First thing is open my eyes and I meditate. And the reason why is because your subconscious mind is most readily accessible right when you wake up and right before you go to sleep because it's still going to be in theta. Once you like start get out and moving, you fall into like alpha and beta. And when you're sleeping, you're in delta. So while your mind is still in those theta brain waves, that's when it's most susceptible to suggestions. And therefore, when you start listening to positive affirmations of like, dear God, thank you for this day. Thank you for the beauty and abundance that surrounds me. Thank you for my perfect health. Thank you for laughter and joy. All of these things, it's kind of like you're gifting yourself 10 or 15 minutes of peace. And that peace is what it's going to do is it's going to raise your vibration. And so therefore, anything that crosses your path for the rest of the day must be at this vibration or better. And so therefore, things like undesirable experiences or people, like they won't have access to you that day because they're not a vibrational match for you. And you can only attract, like law of attraction states that like attracts like. And therefore, if two things have two different vibrational frequencies, like they're not in harmony, and therefore they're not going to run into each other. So when you intentionally raise your vibration by doing something like meditating, you are going to raise the bar for the rest of your day. So for me, meditating, non-negotiable. Second thing is I do a cold shower. And that's like one of my favorite things, because it's like a mind discipline thing. You never wake up and you're like, oh, yay, I'm so excited to jump in this freezing shower. But it's kind of like you teach your mind that you're teaching your body to respond to whatever your mind says. So when my mind says go, my body instantly responds. Even if I don't really want to do it, it's like my mind said do it. So I'm just going to show up and you're going to do it. And there's no maybe, there's no later, there's no. My mind said go do it, and my body responded and said yes. So I think that like discipline is something that's like really important for me. And then plus like once you get out of the cold shower, oh my God, it's just like it's endorphins and it's serotonin, and again, it's just like a whole nother high. It's like a whole nother like heck yeah, like I succeeded again. So it's like I meditated, succeeded. I've cold showered, succeeded. Making your bed, again, it's like a small accomplishment, but it like sets the rest of the day up for success. And then I'm a really big proponent of journaling, just because I feel like journaling is one of those magical exercises. And I know this sounds probably a little pie in the sky, a little woohoo, a little out there, but When you journal, there's magic in the pen. And when you write out what you want to create with intentionality, I mean, all of the cooperative components of the universe are going to collaborate on your behalf to yield to you exactly what you're focusing on continuously. So it's all about repetition. It's all about showing up for yourself and then moving your body. Like, gym again is like a non-negotiable. I'm in the gym 5 to 6 days a week, whether it's lifting, running with my dog, or dancing Zumba. I feel like the way you move your body, your physiology, it's again going to elevate your state and put you in such a powerful, positive mood that you're going to feel unstoppable. So those are a couple things that I do every single day. And then every night I do my gratitude list and my tomorrow's forecast. So.
Of course. Okay. I mean, I don't know if I think that is a good thing to end on. I just wanted to ask you, so what type of work were you doing previously before you decided to go full entrepreneur?
I graduated U of M with the international business, the bachelor's in international business, and then I got scooped up into the automotive world. So as you are probably from, like, Detroit's like Motor City, so there's a huge car industry. So I was working at Lear, which is like a tier one automotive supplier. And they make seats, and they also do like power electrical systems for the cars. And it just so happens that, like, I'm not mechanically inclined by any shape or fashion, like no way, shape, or form mechanically inclined. I pretty much know how to fill up my gas tank, and that's where that ends. So that wasn't necessarily the best fit for me, but I do strongly believe that, we're like everybody's on their own unique path. We are not. There's a saying that Dr. Wayne Dyer says, and it goes, we're not human beings having a spiritual experience. We're spiritual beings having a human experience, and that we chose to come here and we chose to experience all of this. And therefore, every single one of us has a unique path, a unique history, unique life experiences. And if you open yourself up, and step kind of into that receiving mode, there are so many different universal, like, gifts or truths or lessons to be learned, stepping blocks along the way that make you who you are today. And if you're able to shift your perspective from victim and stop saying, oh, poor me, oh, this happened, and I'm suffering because of this, or I'm in pain because of that, or I can't because he said so. Then, and you shift your mindset and you shift your perspective to, like, no, I'm powerful. I'm strong. I am capable. I will succeed. Your whole entire life will change.
Now you just got me thinking. Again with hockey, Coach John Tortorella, he shames his players. It's like, you're pathetic. You can't be here. Get off the Flyers. Go back to the farm team. Go back to Lehigh, sort of thing. It's like it's insulting, and yet he sees that as motivation. It's like, jeez. And you look at the young guys like Bedard, and they're like, I don't think he would thrive under his tutelage, but it's like, how do you counteract a bad boss? It's counteracting a bad boss sort of thing. Then it's like, I'm gonna get that promotion. I'm gonna show my supervisor up. I'm getting that promotion sort of thing. Sort of
Yeah,
like it's that
absolutely.
mentality. But then that might click with some of the older guys, but I don't see that clicking with the younger guys, because they're not as mature. So I guess any tips for anyone who wants to be a boss,
I would
not to
say.
wind up like Tortorella, but yeah.
So I'm a huge proponent of mentorship. I've had different mentors and coaches the majority of my adult life and invested tens of thousands of dollars into coaching. And one of the beautiful things about mentorship or coaches is that they're breathing belief into you. And so even when you don't believe in yourself, like we all have our ups and we all have our downs and we all have our moments of despair, like life happens. And one of the best things about having a coach is you have someone to call who's been there, done that, and has experienced those low valleys and is there for you to lean on and learn from their experience. So for the mentorship, I love having a coach or having a mentor because they are breathing belief into me. And so with my students, the same thing. I breathe belief into them. I see their greatness. I know what their potential is, and I want to unlock that for them. I want to help them unleash that. And so by telling people that like they suck or they're never going to amount to anything or what are they thinking? Like I would never say any of that to anybody. And if they're in a sort of like a verbally abusive relationship like that, I would just a couple of things. One, it's like if it's a parent where you're not able to, if it's a parent, family, a relative where you're not able to relatively escape that or distance yourself from that relationship, then you have to step up and be the bigger person and kind of again approach it with awareness and love and say, "Mom, Dad, like I love you. I really don't appreciate being spoken to like this." Or for me, for example, like when I was in corporate, I quit my corporate job because I had the world's most negative boss in the whole world. He was absolutely intolerably pessimistic, incredibly negative, totally miserable. And here I am, like this like ball of light radiating positivity. And he was probably just annoyed with me as I was at him. But I had to remove myself from the situation. But the people that challenge us the most are usually, again, the ones who allow us to grow the fastest. Had I had the most amazing boss in the world, I probably would have never left corporate. And had I never left corporate, I never would have pursued my passion of horses. So it's like even your arch enemies in life, even the people who push your buttons the most, even the people that you literally cannot stand, you at the end of the day, you have to like, you have to thank them and you have to like say a prayer and say like, "Thank you, God, for putting them in my path so that way I could grow to become the person that I was meant to be today."
Of course, and that's a great note to end on. Oh, all right, everyone. Thank you for listening. If you want to support me, links for the audiobook, Growing Hockey, will be down there. I'll list off the others. And in speaking of journals, you can purchase the hockey journal as well from lulu.com. If you want to go check that out. Of course, link is in the show notes. Lucy, do you have anything you want to promote?
Yeah, so we have a 16-week program that allows people to very intentionally rewire their subconscious mind, transform their identity, and start taking massive action towards their goals. But what we've done is we've condensed it into an hour and a half training that we've actually made free to all of your listeners. So if they go to the ultimate success, I'm sorry, there's no the, it's just ultimatesuccessblueprint.com/blueoasis, they can go ahead and download. It's normally $1,000 training, but again, if they go to slash blue oasis, they'll be able to access that training for free. And it's got incredible tools and techniques that are going to take people from where they are to where they want to be, collapse timelines, and just really experience unprecedented success in all areas of their life. So I'm really excited that we were able to put that training together.
Okay. Even though I it's the first time I'm hearing about this, but of course, I'll be sure to check it out. Send me that link, the links on Podmatch, and I'll be sure to add them in the show notes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Anything else before I end this segment?
Thank you so much for having me. It was wonderful, talking.
You're welcome. Okay. Have a great day, everyone. Peace out.